Chapter 3. Pain and Shame. The next morning, I began a new mission to study harder, to become more than common, and Biddy agreed to help me study. Since I was now so enthusiastic, she gave me extra work to take home. That night, I stopped at the village bar to meet Joe and walk home with him. I found him still drinking with Wopsle and a stranger. "Hello, Pip," Joe said. When he said my name, the stranger, a secret-looking man I'd never seen, turned and nodded at me.
"You were saying,"
the man said, turning to Joe, "that you're the blacksmith." Joe nodded. Then the stranger took a file from his pocket and mixed his drink with it, looking at me the whole time, and I knew it was Joe's file as soon as I saw it. And I knew the stranger knew my convict, and I could hardly breathe. When we finally got up to leave, the man insisted on giving me a coin, which he wrapped in some paper and put in my hand.
"Yours to keep."
My mind was spinning. I did not hear a word Joe said on the way home. Then, when we got home, my sister was so bad-tempered that Joe told her about the coin.
"Let's see it," she said.
I took it out and discovered that the paper around the coin was actually money. Joe ran back to the bar, but the stranger was long gone. My sister put away the money for safekeeping. In bed that night, I thought guiltily of my old secret and how low and common it was to know convicts. I got myself to sleep by thinking of visiting Miss Havisham's again, but my sleep was filled with scary dreams. More than once that night, I screamed myself awake. A week later, I returned to Miss Havisham's. Estella led me again through the dark passages, but along the way, she suddenly stopped and turned to me.
"Well?"
"Yes, miss."
"Am I pretty?"
"Yes, I think you're very pretty."
"Am I insulting?"
"Not as much as last time."
As I was answering, she struck my face powerfully.
"What do you think of me now, you little common monster?"
"I won't tell you."
"Going to tell upstairs, are you?"
"No," I said, "I'm not."
"Why don't you cry again, poor little boy?"
"Because I'll never cry for you again," I said, which was a complete lie, for I was crying inside for her then, and I know what pain she cost me after. I followed her to her room where some of Miss Havisham's relatives sat waiting. A few minutes later, they glared at me when Estella called me first to see Miss Havisham. In the passage, we passed a big gentleman with a dark face who put his hand on my shoulder.
"Who's this?"
I introduced myself. Then Estella said we had to go.
"Behave, boy," the man boomed.
I was glad when he let me go, for his hand smelled of scented soap.
"So,"
Miss Havisham said when I entered,
"you're back, are you?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Today you'll help me walk. Come here."
I gave her my arm, and we walked slowly around the room.
"What do you think that is?"
she asked, pointing at the long table.
"Where those cobwebs are?"
"I don't know, ma'am."
"It's a great wedding cake. Mine," she said.
Just then, Estella returned with Miss Havisham's relatives.
"Dear Miss Havisham," said one woman, "how well you look."
"I certainly don't," said Miss Havisham. "I'm skin and bone."
"Poor dear soul," said another woman. "You can't be expected to look well after all you've been through."
"And how are you?"
asked Miss Havisham, continuing straight past the women.
"Well," said the woman, "to be honest, I often have trouble sleeping at night because I'm thinking of you."
"Then don't think of me," responded Miss Havisham.
"I can't help it," said the lady, beginning to cry. "And when I think of Matthew Pocket never coming to visit you, I..."
Miss Havisham stopped suddenly and looked at the woman.
"Matthew will come see me," said Miss Havisham. "When I'm dead and laid on that table, he'll stand at my head, and you'll stand there, and the rest of you there. Now go!"
After they left,
Miss Havisham said,
"It's my birthday, Pip. I don't allow anyone to speak of it, but once a year my relatives visit me on my birthday. That wedding cake was brought here on my birthday long ago. When I die and am laid upon that table, it'll be the final curse on the man who broke my heart."
There was a long silence after that. When Estella returned, Miss Havisham told me to come back again in a week, and Estella left me at the door with some food again. After eating, I was wandering about when I saw a pale young gentleman.
"Hello," he said.
"Hello," I replied.
"Come and fight," he said.
Confused, I began to follow him. Then he suddenly turned back and pulled my hair and hit my stomach with his head.
"Now you have a reason to fight me. Regular rules," he said, jumping from foot to foot with his fists in the air.
I was surprised when I knocked him down with one punch, but he was back on his feet immediately. I was surprised when I knocked him down again with my next punch. Again, he jumped up, and again I knocked him down. This continued until he shook my hand, admitting defeat. Then he said goodbye and disappeared into the house. I nervously looked around as he left. I felt there had been someone watching while we were fighting, but I saw no one. In the courtyard, Estella was waiting with the keys, and her face was flushed.
"You may kiss me if you like."
I kissed her cheek, which I had secretly wanted to do, but I felt that the kiss was like money given to a lowly, common boy, and that it was worth nothing. After that, I felt guilty about hurting the pale young gentleman. I never saw him at the house again, though I continued to visit Miss Havisham's regularly for several months. My sister and Pumblechook talked often about the great plans Miss Havisham must have for me, and I admit I began to hope for something great myself. As we got used to each other, Miss Havisham began to ask me questions. I told her I was to be apprenticed to Joe, but I added that I wanted to learn as much as I could, hopeful that she would offer me help. Meanwhile, Estella was moody, sometimes insulting me, sometimes actually being friendly, and sometimes telling me she hated me. Miss Havisham enjoyed watching us. She would sometimes whisper to Estella something that sounded like,
"Break their hearts without pity."
Then one day, Miss Havisham said I was growing tall and it was time for me to be apprenticed to Joe. She asked me to bring him with me the next week. Joe was extremely uncomfortable there. He was unable to respond to Miss Havisham except by talking to me, and I could see Estella's eyes laughing at him. I'm sorry to say I felt ashamed of Joe. When Miss Havisham asked if he expected money when I became his apprentice, Joe looked upset.
"Now, Pip," he said to me, "you know that question needs no answer. We're best friends, and we've been looking forward to working together for so long."
Miss Havisham looked at Joe with respect, understanding him better than I'd thought possible.
"Well, Pip has earned money," she said. "Here's £25. Estella, let them out."
When I asked if I should come again, Miss Havisham said,
"No, Gargery is your master now."
Then she called Joe back and told him we should not expect anything more from her. My sister was very pleased with the money. That night, we went out for dinner to celebrate with Wopsle and Pumblechook. Everyone else was happy, but I felt my dreams of the last year slipping away. Whereas I had once looked forward to being Joe's apprentice, I now felt ashamed. I began my apprenticeship, never telling Joe how I really felt. I thought about Estella constantly, continuing to study in my free time and trying to teach Joe what I learned, to make both of us less common.